You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO at 102.7 FM.
The Evergreen Line was first proposed back in the 1980s. It was to connect Burnaby with Port Moody and Coquitlam. It was originally meant to be a branch of the Millennium Line, but as costs for the Millennium Line rose, the Evergreen Line was postponed. In 2004, new plans were unveiled, this time for a light rail line. Those plans were shelved again. In 2008, yet another plan, introduced with an expected completion date of next year. But there was only one snag, a $400 million budget shortfall. For Lower Mainland municipalities, the struggles over the Evergreen Line are a familiar story. It's just one of a number of projects that these communities have seen postponed or cancelled due to funding challenges. Derek Corrigan is the mayor of Burnaby. He joins me by phone this morning to talk about funding challenges for municipalities. Hello, Derek.
Oh, it's nice to be with you, Jane. It's nice to be back on Co-op Radio.
Yes, good to have you. How is tax revenue distributed amongst the various levels of government, municipal, provincial, and federal?
Well, I think most of your listeners would find it interesting that municipalities receive only 8 cents out of every tax dollar that's paid by our citizens. 92 cents of that tax dollar go to the federal and provincial governments. And for that 8 cents, we're the ones who provide your water and sewer, your garbage collection, your parks and recreation facilities, heritage protection. We provide you with planning and building and roads. We provide fire and police protection for that 8 cents. One has to wonder what's done with the other 92 cents, but I can tell you very often you find it doesn't come back to the communities that actually put those tax dollars in the hands of senior governments.
So does funding come from the federal and provincial governments directly to municipalities outside of that 8 cents?
No. It doesn't, and it's frustrating because it's very difficult to get them to support us on infrastructure needs for our community. Though they make regulations and provide orders that we have to improve water quality or we have to improve the quality of discharges into receiving waters, they'll always come out with regulations, but very seldom does the money to do those things follow. In fact, the infrastructure deficit across Canada is horrendous and one that is raised, I think, universally across the board, whether it's by large corporations or by small towns, as being a huge factor in Canada's future.
Now, here in Vancouver, we've experienced quite a lot of money going into infrastructure to create buildings for the 2010 Olympics. Did that money come from the federal government? I'm presuming, and the provincial government, some of that money came from there.
Well, there would have been some of that money coming from the federal government, and it seems when it comes to building stadiums, there's lots of money to go around. When you think about $1 billion being spent on a convention center, and now there's over $500 million being spent on a roof for a football stadium that's going to host, 18-20 dates a year. And in fact, there's even money, I think it's about $30 million being spent for a temporary facility to be able to host the Lions and the Whitecaps. So someone's priorities are skewed, you know, and I think all of us who are out there trying to deal with the day-to-day problems in municipalities know that. We know that it's a peculiar thing in Canadian society that you go begging cap in hand for equipment for your hospitals or funds to run a children's hospital, but there seems to be lots of money for a convention center or a sports stadium.
Now, I talked about the problems with the Evergreen Line in my introduction, and in my understanding is that it's been a priority, that line, for an overall transportation plan for the region for years. How does it keep getting set aside?
Well, because other priorities of the provincial and federal government are put ahead of the priorities for the region. You know, it's a classic example, I think, of having the provincial and federal will imposed on the ability of municipalities to do what they believe is the right thing for the future of our communities. It's been a situation, at least in the case of the Expo Line and the Millennium Line, the provincial government paid for all of those lines. I think we found a new scenario developing when the provincial government found that they could still order where the line was going, but reduce their contribution to about 17% in the Canada line. So they're still able to call the tune, but they're not paying the piper. Instead, the municipalities ended up with $1 billion in debt that is now throttling them and making it absolutely impossible for them to do anything about advancing the rest of the system or the priority choices that were in place before that happened. So you can imagine the frustration that's being expressed. And in order to do that, the provincial government really was looking at an effort to take a lot of that money and put it into Eastern Canada by making sure that the work went to Bombardier and SNC-Lavalin. So even though they claim to be going out to get the very best bids in the world, in reality what it comes down to is Eastern Canada still controlling exactly what technology is used here and where the money goes.
Now, we talked about the Olympic buildings, and I know that the RAV line has also been something that soaked up a lot of transportation money. Is that the story, that Vancouver gets the money and the outlying municipalities don't?
Well, you know, Vancouver is the center of the universe. It's kind of our own little Toronto, you know, and we in other municipalities, three quarters of the people in Metro Vancouver don't live in Vancouver. They live in Surrey and Burnaby and Coquitlam and Richmond. And in many cases, the priorities that are put on are that if Vancouver gets something, it's all of Metro Vancouver that should be thankful. Realistically, in the case of Vancouver, that line could have gone in for $1 billion. Instead, it was $2 billion because everything had to be tunneled. The rest of the communities, whether it's Richmond, Surrey, Vancouver, or even Coquitlam with the Evergreen Line, take above grade lines. We don't get that kind of money spent in our cities. And in fact, we're told, in the case of Coquitlam, that if you want your line undergrounded, then the city is going to have to pay for that, even if it's for a short period of time in their city center. So there is a very different attitude, and sometimes I worry about the fact that Vancouver perceives itself as being in a position to get the very best, even if that might take away from accomplishing other projects in other municipalities. We could have done both the Richmond-Vancouver connection and the Evergreen Line with the money that was available if different choices had been made, if we had gone to, for instance, a light rail technology.
What are your most pressing infrastructure needs in Burnaby?
Well, obviously in Burnaby, as we're working very, very hard to avoid our combined sewers, which are something we've inherited, where we have sewer water being mixed with our groundwater and going into the inlet. So a major project for us and a major commitment for the city has been to ensure that we get those sewers separated and then we get our sewage system in order. That's a big item, and we keep looking for funding from the federal government to be able to accomplish that. We're obviously, we've just spent $800 million on a water treatment plant, and our citizens are absorbing the cost of that plant now on their tax bills. And there's both the Lionsgate and Iona treatment centers for sewage that have to be done over the next decade or two, and both of them are billion-dollar projects. So, you know, we stare a big infrastructure deficit in the face, and I think most of the politicians are now saying we're not in a position with municipal taxes to be able to support this kind of expenditure. We need more help.
What models do you look to for a more rational system of funding municipalities?
Well, I think the Swedish system. I'm here today at the Scandinavian Midsummer Festival, and I'm reminded of the Swedish system in which taxes are collected by the municipalities and then sent on to the county and federal governments for the services that they provide. I think sometimes that the wrong people are getting first dibs on the tax dollar, that often we find the farther government is away from the people, the less contact there is with the realities of everyday life in their communities, and the more tendency there is to make decisions that are purely based on politics and sustaining their power. And so I think when we were able to make decisions that were not parochial around the region about prioritizing the line to Coquitlam, where a large amount of growth was occurring, it was pretty frustrating that because of the Olympics, that the provincial and federal governments agreed that a line that was a much lower priority would be put ahead. And in effect, promised that both would be done at the same time, knowing full well that that would never happen, that the deficits that would be caused by the expenditures on the RAV line would prohibit ever being in a position to go ahead with the Evergreen line without a major change in funding.
Now, some of the municipalities outside of Vancouver are growing extremely fast. Do you think that that growth is going to equate to an increase in political influence?
I hope so. I think that that it's very positive that other communities in British Columbia are growing. We have a limited amount of space in the Lower Mainland. Our geography is very challenging to be able to accept the amount of people that want to live here. But there's other beautiful places in British Columbia, and I think people are finding that those locations can provide them with a great lifestyle. So people are moving out, and I think a lot of people are retiring out of the main city and looking at other locations. I think also that those economies are becoming more vibrant, and we're looking at opportunities for people to make a good living in other parts of British Columbia. So I'm excited about that. We're a growing province that's very attractive worldwide, and we need to be very smart about how we're investing in our province to make sure that we do the very best we can with the limited amount of tax dollars that people can afford to pay.
Well, thank you for talking to us this morning, Derek.
Well, it's an absolute pleasure, and I'm glad that you're addressing these issues, because I think it's important for our citizens to know and recognize that municipal government is trying hard, and that that when we're called names by people like Kevin Falcon saying we're dysfunctional, is they're simply covering up for their own failures to look at an overall picture of growth in our region and how that can best be served. And we continue as municipal governments to try to do the best things for our citizens, but I hope people out there share some of our frustration.
Thanks again.
Thanks a million. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I've been speaking with Derek Corrigan. He is mayor of the Lower Mainland Municipality of Burnaby.